This week on Potlatch, the new president of the Tanana Chiefs, Spud Williams. Upbeat music from Art Garfunkel. What a wonderful world. The new president of the Tanana Chiefs, William Williams, was born in Seattle of native Alaskan parents. When he was 2 years old, he moved to Nenana and has been an Alaskan for good. By the way, he took his nickname from having taken mashed potatoes with his milk as a youngster. For that reason, he's known as Spud. On March 15th, the Tanana Chiefs named him president. Williams said he began in the Tanana Chiefs.
As an executive board member, I spent probably, I'd say, about 8 years as an executive board member. After that, I went to work for Fairbanks Native Association on the pipeline employment program. And when TCC started contracting, I was asked to come over as part of the Native Services staff. So I worked for Tanana Chiefs Native Services in the housing program. And when the position for the Director of Native Services came open, I moved from the housing program over to the director's slot. After filling that job for approximately 6 months about 6 months, then I was elected president just recently. So those are the major jobs I've held for TCC, approximately 8 years or longer of actual involvement in Tanana Chiefs.
That tune is called Early Morning Peanuts. It's from a local Fairbanks area group called Tanana Grass. Speaking of Tanana, the new president of the Tanana Chiefs explains how he took over the presidency from Al Kessler.
Al Kessler was actually a full-time paid president. What happened was that he had a job offer from CDC. So he's the director of the Community Enterprise Development Corporation. It's a statewide organization that funds and manages minority businesses in the rural areas of Alaska. Okay, when he did that, in essence, the management system became a business-like system of managing the Tanana Chiefs organization, and he was the chairman of the board. And in looking at a good business practice in an organization this size, it makes sense to set up a management form of government. I mean, a management system of administering programs, etc. And it takes the politics out of management, which some people feel that there's a lot of politics in electing and selecting a president. And the president might not be qualified to manage the large sums of money. You know, the qualifications of the president aren't based on his ability to manage money. They're based on, well, let's face it, popularity sometimes is one of the major issues in selecting a president. And so the system we have now of a full-time president is the ongoing system that Tanana Chiefs has had in the past. Okay, there was a bylaw change that would have changed the system of management to a management form where the president would be the chairman of the board and not the day-to-day management of the corporation. And the full board did not want to act on this bylaw change. And so, in essence, it was tabled. And so, at that point in time, I elected to run for the office of president because I was looking toward the job of executive vice president if the bylaw change had gone through. And since it didn't go through, then I was forced to run for the office of president to fill this slot as the manager of Tanana Chiefs Conference. And you'll find that, you know, in Indian governments and in Indian politics, they want a strong head to run their corporations. They want to have an advocacy form of a corporation where the president can be pointed at, and if things are going wrong or if they have desires and wishes of things they want in the villages, they want to have one person they can point at and say, "You're the person I want to do this." And so, in keeping this form of management, they can look to the president to fulfill the advocacy function of the corporation, do the lobbying, the politicking, and be the head and the responsible person that they can look to receive those services.
When the red iron ore pits run plenty, but the cardboard-filled windows and old men on the hills tell you now that the whole town is empty. nothing here now to hold them.
The music of Joan Baez. Next, Bud Williams looks to the beginning of the Tanana Chiefs.
It started way before I was ever born, and way before my parents were ever born, and way before my parents' parents were ever born. The Tanana Chiefs Conference is the traditional form of area-wide government of the Indian people of the interior. It surfaced, you know, during major crises. They used to have a meeting place in Tanana, and it was called the Tanana Chiefs Conference, where the leaders from all of the villages converged once a year or during crisis situations, like when the Alaska Railroad came up. You saw a strong showing of the regional leaders, the chiefs, that came to meet at one place to discuss issues that were affecting their land. During land claims, you saw the organization of a more formal organization formed that could deal with the issues of land claims. And since land claims, it has become very formalized as a corporate structure to deal with issues that affect the villages and the native people in our region. But the Tanana Chiefs itself, like I say, nobody really knows how old the organization is. It's hundreds of years old.
Spud Williams next tells how the Tanana Chiefs has taken over the services which used to be provided by the federal government.
Well, basically, through dissatisfaction of the services that were being received by the village people, they started looking at providing those services themselves with the funds that were available under present programs. Okay, we started requesting the right to contract these services, I would say, about 10 years ago. And we started the process of going after contracts through bi-Indian agreements. Okay, under government regulations, any services given to Indian people are contractable under bi-Indian agreements. This excludes trust responsibilities like realty, forestry, credit, and a few services that by federal regulations cannot be contracted completely. But social service functions, employment functions, housing functions, things like this that the BIA were administering for the people, and the people were dissatisfied with the service delivery system and things, they thought that the BIA was wasting a lot of money in administration. And so we went after the contracts and started contracting directly with the federal government to deliver our own services to our own people. Hopefully, we're doing a lot better job reaching the people and, you know, having a lot more grassroots input into the services and the service delivery system so that they meet the needs better. The health was one of the first functions that we took over. Okay, we've got a complete health service delivery system now that is set in place. We have people in the field that are called health aides, and they deliver the basic health function or the basic health services within the region. And almost all of the villages in our region have this service available. We have mental health functions, we have accident prevention functions, we have you know, anything that deals with health, we are now involved with through contracting through Indian Health Services. We also have the contracts that the BIA used to administer. We contracted almost a total agency. We contract the employment services, like I stated, the social service functions, the housing functions, the village government that used to be the BIA tribal ops functions. We contract the credit function doing only the legwork. We still don't have final sign-off authority because that is a trust program. We contract the realty program, which is the legwork part of realty, not the final sign-off or approval on trust lands, which is still held by the federal government. We contract some of the agricultural programs, ag extension programs. We have expanded the old tribal ops office into a village government assistance program that covers grantsmanship, covers credit, covers setting up village governments or second-class cities or IRAs, you know, at the wishes of the people. All these services are available upon request, and we also go out and do a lot of field work, you know, making people aware that these services are available, designing them as per their needs and as per their requests. We have reorganized the BIA contracts into four basic areas. We've got what we call natural resources, takes care of the forestry, the ag, the realty, and those services that deal with natural resources. We've got the village government services that takes care of the old tribal ops function, village management assistance, the government assistance programs, and the credit programs. And then we've got what you mentioned, the human resources services, which is the social services, the employment services, the adult vocational training programs, the direct employment services, and the higher education programs. And last is the HIP program, which is the BIA housing program. Now those are all grouped into what we call human resources because they deal directly with people and they're direct people services. The fourth one is an in-house supportive services which takes care of the clerical staff, the accounting staff, and reception functions, and those in-house functions that deal mainly with paperwork. We're involved in building houses insofar as we are a funding source and a technical assistance source. Okay, we're only limited by funding, basically. We average probably $500,000 in construction a year. The basic price per unit under the HIP program is approximately $10,000 to $12,000 to date. This includes no labor money. This is strictly a materials grant for housing and housing repair. Now this is not a part of what most people consider the housing money, which is the HUD program, which is controlled by a complete and separate entity. This is the Tana Chiefs Housing Authority. Now most people get the two programs confused. They are not the same programs, and they're not even associated really with each other. The HIP program is strictly a grant program, a self-help program where we supply the funds, the technical assistance for buying material, coordinating transportation, helping with blueprints, house design, you know, and just the technical aspects of housing. But the actual construction of the houses is taken on by the villages themselves through self-help programs. That's why the price through the HIP program is fairly low. But once that house is built, the villages will select the recipients of that house based on priorities that we've set within the program, which is old people first, handicapped, and widows with children second, large, low-income families third. But we get, approximately $500,000 a year, and it's almost all material money. Very, very little money that even goes out for administration of that program.
Spud Williams says the Tanana chiefs arrange for the building of about 35 houses a year. He says the chiefs make the decisions on where to build the houses.
Based on need and performance. Like if we give a village a HIP grant last year, they haven't completed their program, they're ineligible for any further HIP grants until that program is completed. It's 3 to 4 houses per village, based on need and performance. When you're talking about self-help programs, there's only so much labor that can be expended in a free program like that. If you put 20 houses in one village under that type of a program, you'd impact that village so extensively that they would have no means of making a living because their time would be completely taken up with volunteer labor. So it's based, you know, the actual number of houses you can put in a village is based on the available volunteer-type labor force. So it does restrict how many houses you can put in the village per year. Our agricultural program is a fairly small program. Here again, we are basically a technical assistance and funding source for small community garden plot-type projects. You know, we don't get involved in extensive agricultural projects. We have advocated for some of the sub-regions where they are looking into large agricultural projects with the village corporation lands. You know, we do give some assistance to village corporations, but we are not in the corporation game because they are profit corporations, and we are a nonprofit service delivery organization. And we give assistance as we can, you know, to the profit corporations, but we try to stay away from them as much as possible because it really doesn't, you know, meet our contract guidelines. We have funding available to buy seeds, to buy fertilizer, to buy rototillers, you know, small farm equipment and implements, things like this. And hopefully, you know, in the long range, long outlook of this type of a program, you're going to develop people that are going to develop an interest, you know, in agriculture. They're going to see that they are able to grow their own food. They don't have to order this food from Fairbanks or Anchorage or wherever they're ordering fresh produce from, you know, at the exorbitant prices that this kind of food goes for now. They're able to supplement subsistence living, which is dying out, you know, because the encroachment of civilization in the villages is imminent. It's coming. We're trying to hold back. We're trying to give those time enough to, you know, acculturate the other way. You know, we hate to even see it come, but we realize that sooner or later it's going to happen. Alaska's population is going to double in the next 20 years or whatever the projections are. And we realize that the game is going to diminish. You know, we are trying to hold the line on the subsistence style of living that the people are accustomed to. It's our way of life, but we also realize, and a lot of the village leaders are starting to realize, that it can't last forever. You know, what happened in the United States is going to happen here. God forbid, but it's going to happen. And so hopefully through this agricultural program, this what we call seed money, and it actually is seed money, we buy seeds with it, people are able to supplement subsistence lifestyle with a small agricultural lifestyle. You know, we've had quite a history of gardening. Since the missionaries came to this country, they've tried to make farmers out of Indians. And you look it back through, you know, the last 50 or 70 years, and you look at your large missions, they were self-subsistence missions based on agriculture and hunting and fishing. But a large part of their food was gotten from agricultural projects. And so you take a look at a lot of the older people in the villages that were put in missions, you know, through... They lost parents and things like this through influenza epidemics and things like that. They were put into missions, and they became farmers. So there is some background in farming already out there in the villages.
On this week's program, the man in charge of guiding the Tanana chiefs through the intricate maze of federal government paperwork, as well as serving Native Alaskans. St. Lawrence Island Song, performed by the University of Alaska singers and dancers. The song is entitled Being Excited About Dancing. I'm Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production.